kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Fun thing, Chris, old co-host Chris, just messaged me on Facebook. He's like, hey, do you want to play some Rock Band? Motherfucker, you know I'm doing my show.
It's Thursday night.
And I even invited him on.
I have pants on again, so I'm fine.
On that note, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me, as usual, is the pants-wearing CJ. CJ, how are your pants?
Well, they were wet because I got some of my favorite lemon water, and then I opened it, and I spilled it when I went to go take a drink, and lemon so it was water. All over my pants.
Sure.
Very clear liquid.
Sure.
Very good lemon water, though. I will say.
Well, we have a fun show lined up today. No guests, but, you know, it's everything's kind of crazy with, I guess this is the week before E3. Shit starts on Sunday. Are you excited?
Yeah, I managed to get, I requested Sunday off last week for Microsoft's press conference because I have to see that.
I am so excited for E3. This is like Christmas to me.
Yeah, it's exciting because right now there's not that many games coming out this year that I'm really hyped for. So I'm really hoping they like announce some stuff that's coming soon.
Yeah, that not much. I'm surprised not much has really leaked out. There's been a lot of allegedly fake rumors and fake leaks popping up, but nothing has really been like fully substantiated. The only thing I could really think that has been basically completely leaked and confirmed is a new Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, and they weren't going to be that secret about it anyway. Yeah. Like, Assassin's Creed comes out pretty much every year. Actually, every year. It's just a new one wasn't last year, but they still did the remaster.
Yeah.
Like, they always do an Assassin's Creed game.
But it's, you know, between, art assets leaking and, like, a fucking t-shirt was accidentally displayed early at GameStop with the new character on it. It looks like a new Assassin's Creed is absolutely confirmed.
That's cool. They gave them some time to actually work on a new one because they didn't have to pump it out every year.
What are you looking forward to at E3? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, obviously, I mean, the biggest thing to me is just the Scorpio stuff. I want to know what the price is looking at, what I'm going to need to save up to be able to afford one. And then, I mean, I'm hoping that Sea of Thieves can really sway me. I'm interested in that one of every game coming out that's, like, an exclusive.
Have you done any of the, like, the alpha testing for Sea of Thieves?
No, I have not.
Why not?
Because I just never applied for it, so it's just...
I thought it was just included as part of the preview now.
It may be now, but it wasn't when I knew it was going on.
Fire up your preview dashboard and see if it's still listed under the things you could pick. Because I know next week they're doing beta, or not beta, but like alpha tests pretty much every day.
Well, that would be pretty sick, because I want to test the game before I buy it anyway, because that one I'm interested in. I'm interested in the new Borderlands, mainly, because there's been a lot of stuff going on about Borderlands lately. So if that new Borderlands gets announced at E3, I can pretty much drop every other game I ever want to play, because I love Borderlands.
I think one of the craziest rumors circles around Borderlands, where there's... Again, complete rumor. I don't believe this one at all. But the rumor is Borderlands 3 is going to be a timed exclusive on Xbox, which is weird.
The only reason to believe that is the fact that I believe... Recently, there was somebody that tweeted out that's almost 100% accurate all the time. I think we talked about it at one point, saying that... Microsoft has nailed down a big exclusive or a big deal with a big company over a huge franchise, but he didn't say what it was.
I know. I know that's one of the rumors that keeps popping up, but yeah, we'll find out on Sunday.
That would be really interesting. I mean,
that would.
Either way, it's like I'll still buy it. Like if it's timed exclusive or not, I don't care. I'm going to be playing it. But
I don't know. I'm getting so tired of exclusives. I really am.
Me too. I don't mind it when it comes directly from like Microsoft or Sony or whatever, because like, it's like then they have the total right.
I guess it comes down to how long the exclusive is.
If it's something bullshit like a year with Destiny and Rise of the Tomb Raider, then it's like that's kind of shitty. See, if it's like a month,
My concern is having a timed game. If you know the game is going to be on other platforms eventually, that's one thing. But to have part of a game locked away when you're paying the same price, that's my gripe.
I mean, I think that's annoying too, but it's also like, I think a year is just too long for that stuff.
No.
Like, I don't think they've confirmed how long the exclusivity is for the Crash Bandicoot bundle, but I'm assuming that's probably going to be around a year as well.
Rumor there is that it's a year for Crash as well, but I don't think anything has been 100% confirmed yet.
I just think that's just too long to wait. And then you have the annoyance of like, well, technically in top 10 lists, if you're an Xbox One player, then the game came out this year instead. And it's like, yeah, but what? Like, what do you do with that?
Speaking of stupid fucking exclusives, there's a new game getting resurrected that is going to be coming out this fall. A brand new Bubsy the Bobcat game.
Yeah, I saw your tweets about this.
Bubsy the Woolies Strike Back is an all-new game releasing this fall on Steam and PS4 only.
Yeah.
Why?
Because PS4 is a bigger company, or the bigger seller, so... of course they do that. It's the same deal with a lot of those games that are just, like, smaller. Unless Microsoft does direct support.
When there were rumblings of a new Bubsy, I was, like, legitimately excited. Like, oh my god, fucking Bubsy's coming back? Really? I'm on board. And then I saw the image that just said Steam and PS4. I'm like, hey, well, there goes all the excitement I had. Because I won't give a shit if it's only there.
I won't care anyway. I'm not... I mean, I wasn't around when the time of those games, so it's not really like like I've heard of them,
no,
but it's just like I don't care.
Meh.
I still think it's stupid, but oh well.
I'm just fucking exclusives are dumb. I'm so tired of them.
I am too, but it also takes a lot of work to program a game, and maybe they didn't have the money to program for both.
True. You never know.
You got to choose the one that they think they're going to get more sales on. And
something that is going to hit Xbox as well as PS4 and PC is Mega Man Legacy Collection 2 was confirmed. I know there were rumblings about that a while ago. It does include Mega Man 7, 8, 9, and 10 as the rumors predicted. It releases August 8th for $20 on Xbox, PS4, and Steam PC. No word on Switch again, which is kind of shitty, but what are you gonna do?
Yeah. At least Xbox.
It's, yeah, I love Mega Man, so bring it on. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I don't care about Mega Man either.
You're the worst. Only care about Xbox stuff, right?
I mean, there's sometimes with PC, it depends on the stuff, but generally Xbox, yes.
Well, there was an interesting tweet out today from Mikey Barra of Microsoft, who announced that the already powerful Scorpio may be even more powerful than expected as Microsoft unlocked another gig of RAM for developers to use.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
The system comes with 12 gig of RAM, and 8 gig were usable. That has now been bumped up to 9.
at this point, I'm starting to worry that it's too powerful. They won't need to make another system forever.
Yeah. I don't know. That's actually, you have more usable RAM on the Scorpio than total RAM on the PS4 Pro.
Yeah, that's insane.
And
I just saw another thing that I remembered I watched the trailer for earlier from E3 that I'm kind of interested in seeing more about.
Oh, which one?
That vampire game from Focus Interactive.
Oh, yeah.
That one looks interesting. I don't know what the gameplay is going to be because it was just a cinematic trailer, but it makes you kind of interested in what it is.
There's looking to be some really good stuff coming out this fall from, like, the non-AAA people.
Yeah.
Like, Vampire's looking awesome. Elex, E-L-E-X, that one's looking really cool.
I need to look at that. I've heard of it, but I don't really know what it is.
It looks like another action RPG hack and slash style game. It tickles my fancy. I was a fan of, like, Two Worlds and Risen, so that kind of stuff is going to be up my alley.
True. I've never actually played Two Worlds, but I own all of them on Steam, I think. It's just, of course, it's on Steam, so I'm never going to play it.
they're not the greatest, but they're fun. They're enjoyable. But, I don't know. I am also excited for Vampire. I think that one looks really cool. I know they're working on a Call of Cthulhu game as well. That one looks pretty cool. So if you're not a AAA publisher, there's still good shit coming out, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
What other news do I have? There was a Pokemon Nintendo Direct that was held on Tuesday. Everyone was hoping, oh, we're finally going to see some kind of Pokemon game announced for the Switch. Pokemon on Switch, Pokemon on Switch. Then they announced Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon are releasing later this year on the 3DS.
Not surprising at all.
Basically, expanded versions of the already available Sun and Moon, not on the Switch, but again on the 3DS. And then that's they announced Pokemon Gold and Pokemon Silver are going to be coming to the Virtual Console on the 3DS.
That's about as surprising as saying that 2K is going to release another basketball game this year,
yeah,
and next year, and the year after that. And the year after that.
Yeah, neither of those are on the Switch, but they did announce at least one game for the Switch. Pokken Tournament DX. Because people want Pokemon, they're going to get a fighting game.
At least the Pokken Tournament thing was actually kind of cool, though. I've seen some stuff on it.
The game is going to release on the Switch September 22nd. It includes all of the content from the Wii U version, including the DLC. It's going to also include one new fighter, Decidueye? I don't know. Pokemon names are stupid.
Yeah, they are.
Going to have some new support Pokemon, team battles, daily challenges, and I'm sure it's still going to be $60.
Yeah, it will be. But they can get it out of them, too.
True. And then last bit of news I have is that Shenmue 3 is no longer releasing December, which I don't think anyone really expected it to release this year. It has been bumped to second half 2018.
Wow, so it's a long bump.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, man, yeah. Fucking E3. I'm so excited for E3.
Some stuff, something about the only game that I actually am excited about this year came out, and now I'm pissed.
What?
So, you know, Agents of Mayhem is basically Saints Row 5. Well, Gat is now being put in it, but he's a pre-order exclusive to GameStop. What a piece of shit.
No! Move.
Like, I want to, if I'm going to pre-order, I'm going to pre-order it on Amazon and save $13. In my opinion, Johnny Gat is not worth $13 to go spend $60 at GameStop instead of $47 with Prime membership.
No, I didn't realize that it was
only at GameStop.
Shit.
That's such a piece of shit move. I'm so mad about that, because I'm so excited about this game. And then Johnny Gat, you know, awesome character, and he gets fucking put behind GameStop exclusivity.
Oh my god!
Just as bad as console exclusivity. It's bullshit.
I saw the news about GAT. I didn't realize it's exclusive. Shit.
Did you pre-order it or something somewhere else already?
No, not yet.
Well, then I guess you gotta choose GameStop.
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. It's not worth it. Amazon all the way. I'm saving money.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm sure it'll eventually be available to buy somewhere else.
Probably for like $1.99. I mean, they did that with the wings in Saints Row Get Out of Hell. It was a pre-order bonus, and then it's like $1.99 now in the store.
Character, but along with unlock and personal missions, unique skins, and voice acting talents of Daniel Day Kim is coming as an exclusive pre-order bonus through GameStop and Steam. Yep. Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a PC gamer, at least I'd be like, whatever, I get it on Steam. This is like, wow. Fuck. Why don't they better do like some pre-order bonus exclusive for like Best Buy and Amazon, like maybe get like Pierce in one of them and Shandy in the other. Just be like, all right, at least we got some good characters to choose from.
Yeah. Ah, man, that's a bummer. I was so excited, and then I didn't pay attention at all to the details, and now I know the details, and it just hurts.
Yeah, it's just like, well, I saw the trailer for it. I was like, oh my god, he's going to be in it. And then at the end of the trailer, exclusive to GameStop. It's just like, god, oh, great.
Damn it. God damn it, Deep Silver. What the fuck?
Yeah, what a piece of shit move.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it's not worth the extra money, though. I'll just get the normal version on Amazon.
True. Yeah, I'll stick with that. I don't know if I'm going to go with Amazon for shit anymore, though.
Why is that?
I've been having terrible luck with Amazon game-wise for a while to begin with. This week was like a whole new level of shit. With Morrowind, Elder Scrolls Online Morrowind expansion came out. Clearly, right. I have a collector edition pre-ordered. With release day delivery, this is something I ordered back in February, so, you know, this is something I should have on Tuesday when the game releases.
Yeah.
On Monday, I go on to Amazon to see if it's pending shipping or getting packed or whatever else, and it said estimated arrival Thursday.
Wow.
I'm already annoyed, because this shit happens way too often with Amazon the way it is. Spend
yeah, that's shitty.
Stupid amount on a collector's edition, and then they don't ship it on time. And this has happened way too like, when they fuck up stuff, they'll give you like a free month of Amazon Prime, like, oh, we'll extend your membership by 1 month to make up for it. We used to be due in March to renew for Amazon.
Yeah.
We are now to January.
Wow.
That's how many times they have fucked up and extended our Prime.
Is it always a, a collector's edition, or is it like normal ones as well?
It's both. I've had both. All right.
I was just curious, because it might be something to do with collector's editions that just, they're stupid and slow about it, and then they don't realize.
I don't know. I've had issues where they're like, well, unfortunately, there was a carrier delay. Like, you're trying to blame UPS for this or FedEx for this when they didn't ship it until a Tuesday. I've had before.
Wow. You see, that's a piece of shit maneuver. See, that's part of the reason I'm not sure what I want to do with games like that, because it's like, one, I'm getting into collecting physical, but two, it's like, if I just buy it or pre-order it digitally, it'll be pre-downloaded and I can play it at midnight.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I've been doing a lot more stuff at Best Buy. It's just a lot of like collector stuff through Best Buy you can only do on the website. And when you order something on BestBuy.com, they'll ping your account like every other week to make sure the money's there and put it temporary hold. Which, you know, I'm not always going to have $150 sitting in my account.
Yeah, because that's really
annoying. We live paycheck to paycheck like idiots.
Well, I do too, but it's like, That's really stupid.
But
like, I wish that stop doing that shit. If I pre-order something, just like when I would pre-order a GameStop, I want you to take my money now and then just give me the thing later. Like, I have the money now. Take my money now. I'll just get it later. And don't have to worry about it. Like, that's what I would do at GameStop. I would just give them the money.
No.
Because you could do that at GameStop. And then it's just like, yeah, now I don't got to worry about it.
See, but Amazon, they fucked up by shipping my game late, which is already irritating. UPS made it tenfold worse.
What did they do?
They didn't deliver it to my address.
Wow, they delivered it to somebody else?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I jumped on to, you know, I checked the tracking information because once it shipped, it changed that, oh, it might show up on Wednesday now. So I went to check and see if it was out for delivery or what, and it said delivered. So I checked the porch, nothing there. I looked downstairs, nothing there. I checked with the neighbors, nothing there. I checked the front door neighbors, nothing there. So I'm freaking out because this is $100 package just gone. Says right. It's delivered, but it was very clearly not delivered to me. I go back on UPS and it says left on front porch. I live in the rear of a building. We don't have a front porch.
Right, so did they just leave it at the front porch of the actual, like, building itself?
No, for the longest time, we couldn't figure out where it was. I talked, you know, online with Amazon. I talked online with UPS. UPS was like, oh, well, when they do deliveries, there's a GPS monitor that locates, you know, where it is when the information's put in. We have to wait for that to be uploaded to check with it. They ended up calling me again today. It's like, well, we just want to call, make sure that you got your package. And it's like, no, I still haven't got my package. You haven't gotten me my package. And the lady I'm talking to is just like, oh, like, are you expecting magic to happen? That this exactly. package just fucking shows up out of nowhere? Magic apparently did happen because of all things. I got a random Facebook message saying, hey, do you live in Sawyersville? I think I got a package meant for you.
Wow.
It was delivered a block and a half away to, you know, my address is 341. Theirs was 191.
Wow.
Not even close.
That's a huge fuck up.
Mine is Main Street. Theirs is like Oliver or something.
Again, you might want to watch how much you're talking. You're giving away your address here.
It wasn't even fucking close. This person had no idea what it was. Their kid ended up opening it up and thinking, oh my God, my mom bought me a game. Yay. And like tore the box open. The actual, like the cardboard slip cover for the collector edition has big chunks torn out of where the sticker is because the kid just like ripped them. The statue inside was broken. Apparently, it arrived that way, so that's not something they did. But apparently, the UPS person, they just threw the box on the porch, and it, I guess, broke the statue inside. But I eventually got my item today. In the meantime, I actually ordered a second one from Amazon because I figured this one was gone. They ended up refunding me the cost of the game to reorder the item. Mm. And it had to be through a reseller because Amazon was sold out. So I ended up paying $45 more for the second copy of the game.
That's shitty.
Which is fun. When I picked up the mine today, the parents were saying, like, yeah, she was actually kind of disappointed because she was looking forward to it. She thought she got a new game. And when I got home and, you know, I tried gluing the statue together, I think it's okay. And I realized I'm going to be getting another one Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that. I contacted the person again and I'm like, listen, when the other one shows up, would you be interested in buying this one? So I'm going to sell them the one that they opened for $45.
That's a really good deal for that.
Yeah, that makes up the $45 that I had to pay extra.
That's true.
So, Latino Heat's asking why I didn't return it for a refund? Because they technically already refunded me for the one that got lost. Now, that one to them, I guess, was just a write-off because I didn't expect it to show up. I sure as fuck didn't expect to get a random Facebook message saying, "Hey, I have your package."
That's funny.
So I figure I had to pay an extra $45 to get a replacement one. I'm going to sell the one that they got for $45, do my best to glue the statue together, and they could have the fucked up box that the kid tore.
Just everything that was there, because all the kid cares about anyway is the game itself.
Yeah. See, my concern was I wanted to get the game because the game comes with like just the standard game disc of Elder Scrolls Online, and then it has a download code inside for the Morrowind expansion and the collector edition content and stuff like that. So the big thing to me with this collector edition was the statue, which hopefully is glued and okay, and then the DLC code, which the kid didn't use because that's when the parents realized, we didn't order that.
So did you use the DLC code out of that one already?
Yes. So when the replacement comes, I'm going to take the code out of that, put it in this other one, and then sell it to them for $45.
I was going to say, are you just going to give the kid the normal version?
Oh, no. I'm going to make sure that, they didn't have to be nice enough to contact me.
No, they could have just got away with the free package. That was very easily just like, whatever, so we just get to keep it.
I figure I had to pay an extra $45. I just want that $45 back, and they get the game. They get a $100 collector edition for $45, which...
$100 broken collector's edition, of which some of it was the kid's fault anyway. So
the statue wasn't their fault. I think it's glued and okay. I got the leg back on. I had it sitting on my desk for a while, and it seemed sturdy enough. So,
and the kid doesn't care about that anyway. They just care about the game, probably.
Probably. But yeah, that was my fun expedition with Amazon this week.
That's funny.
Motherfuckers.
See, that's fucked up. And it makes you wait forever to actually get it again.
Yeah. So at least I got the game. I could play it this weekend. So when everything shows up, then, pass the savings on.
Pass the savings on to you.
Man, before we jump into our reviews, we do actually have a quick giveaway to take care of. We have a handful of copies of the game Spellspire on Xbox One, and we wanted people to email us and tell us why they wanted the game. We only got two emails for this, so they're both getting codes for the game, which is awesome. First emails from John Harvey, who, this one, just reading it doesn't really get the message across because everything is intentionally misspelled. I would, I-E-Y-E, would, W-U-L-D, likes, L-I-K-Z, to win code, K-O-D-E, for F-I-R. Spellspire, so I can show family me is best speller at words. They don't believe me even when me writes amazing und shows them is all dummies. Thanks for chance and good luck to everyone who enter. It's fantastic.
It's an interesting one.
Haha, spell checker really didn't like me typing that message. It's supposed to be bad spelling, but looks like German. It really does. Ist gut. Gore script interview was very interesting, by the way, and the devs seemed really cool. Thanks for the codes last time. They are appreciated. John Harvey, you are getting another game, because thank you for that.
Interesting. I really didn't expect it. You started saying gore script. I'm like, what's happening?
They're just complimenting our show, which is awesome.
Nice.
And then the the other emails from Latin Ruler, who says, good evening to the SML podcast. When this game Spellspire launched, it caught my attention. Due to me being a huge fan of Scrabble, I pictured myself becoming this wizard and use the power of words to defeat my enemies. Also using the power to strengthen my spelling skills even more by enjoying the mechanics of spelling power. And at the same time, enjoy gaming and conquer my enemies within the game. Thanks so much to SML Podcast for this awesome opportunity. You guys rock.
Well, there you go.
Carnage asking, is that BX Latino Heat? See, we have Latin Ruler and Latino Heat, and I'm starting to wonder if they're the same person or not, because I've assumed that they are.
I thought so, too. I think they are.
I don't know.
I think
anymore.
They are, because I believe that we've talked about it before when Latino Heat was in the chat. Like, yeah, but he's here, so he wins. I think.
Like, that'd be funny if this whole time Latin Ruler has been winning shit because Latino Heat's in the chat.
That would be hilarious.
I want this answered. Carnage is asking, so Latino Heat, we need to know, are you Latin Ruler? I need to know. Then no pulse. My next email, fuck SML, here's my entry for this show. That'd be great. So yeah, Latin Ruler, John Harvey, thank you so much for your entries. You both get a copy of the game. Anyway, first game to talk about tonight is called Dirt 4, developed and published by Codemasters, released June 6th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $59.99. Dirt 4 is all about embracing fear. It's about the thrill, exhilaration, and adrenaline that is absolutely vital to off-road racing. It's about loving the feeling of pushing flat out next to a sheer cliff drop, going for the gap that's too small, and seeing how much air you can get. Be fearless. Purnell, our friend Purnell is here to talk about this one with us. Welcome to the show, Purnell.
Thank you for having me, sir. And I got to ask flat out, was that what they gave you to read, or did you just come up with all that on the fly?
That's like the Steam description.
Just making sure, like, holy crap. That's some love right there. Got to push the pedal to the metal to see your way through. Destructive team. Ride. Feel the burn.
So I know this game has been getting like pretty stellar reviews. I'm very curious to hear your take on this. So Purnell, what did you think about Dirt 4?
Well, I'm going to assume that a lot of those reviewers came at it with the I put 40 hours into this game on every blah 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 blah. I'm coming at it as a, hey, I'm this guy who thinks off-road racing is pretty cool, and I got access to this game to do a review for it. What do I think of it? And to be perfectly honest, I came away enjoying the game. I was expecting to kind of feel like get Gran Turismo syndrome from it, which is when you take the concept of a game that you think you would like, stuff it chock full of simulation antics, and just kind of take all the fun clear out of it because you're too busy managing stats and vehicular parts and whatever to enjoy the game proper, which is good for some people, but not for me.
Yeah.
But this game, they offer a number of modes and options, whether you feel as though you want to come at it from as a casual player, or if you want to come at it with not so casual, but you're still not going to reach Gran Turismo-esque levels of simulation.
Yeah.
So when you first start the game, they give you the option to choose whether you want to have like kind of casual controls or if you want to have sim-based controls. And I came at it with wanting the gamer-based controls. And it's pretty much worked out to the letter. So I'm assuming this affects like some as far as like acceleration and having to deal with downshifts and things of that nature. So once you start the game, you go into the career mode. And it allows you to kind of start off with a career. You're like pretty much like at the bottom barrel of courses. They give you like a loaner car because you're on a default team. And they give you a ride-along partner to kind of work you through the ropes of the Dirt Academy and teach you how the game works. In which case, you can skip it if you feel as though you don't need it, but you probably will once you get to like a higher class, which yeah. I'm pretty sure I need to do. I skipped it early on. I was like, I don't want to play the game. So once you get into the game, she kind of talks you through, this is how course driving works. And to be honest, I didn't even know this is how they do these sorts of things. So there are two types of races in this game. There's the rally, which is when you're just kind of doing time trials, so to speak, and you're trying to get to the end of the course in a certain amount of time. And then there are bona fide races where you're actually trying to race other cars, and you're pulling off races. Now, with the rally, though, I guess you did this in the normal mode too. When you're going through the course, your seatmate will kind of read off the course to you.
Oh, yeah, the spotter. Are you curious to know, are you able to turn that off? Because anytime I play a rally game, the first thing I do is turn off the spotter voice.
I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't check for it, but I want to. It's not even that it's a bad thing, because it's cool for the aspect of, you know, hey, this is it wants to feel like the real deal, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the problem is she uses spotter lingo, which I am not fluent with at all. Like, and she didn't even try to tell you what it's like. She's like, you know, it's like a 1-6 on a clock or whatever. It's like the sharper, the higher the number. But as she's reading like five directions, like five components at a time, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm just going to drive the car. I'm going to just turn. Just go turn and go. And I start to kind of try to tune her out eventually. But if you can break down the lingo, it is helpful, because some of these tracks, man, they did weather very well in this game. So there will be tracks where you're driving, and during the course, it'll start to rain or it'll get foggy, and you can barely see crap, but you can't slow down, because if you do, your time's going to suffer. So you might need her commands in order to prep your some steering or turning in advance. Because the other thing about this game, which I noticed compared to like a lot of racing games I've played, is that I'm used to just holding on to the gas and just kind of dealing with whatever comes along. Like, hit the gas, let off the gas on some turns, but overall, just mashing gas. But in this game, you have to decelerate. You have to use your brakes in anticipation of some of the turns. Sometimes you have to do a damn near, like, I don't even know what I want to call it, like a 360, like a short of 180 degree turn, because you're kind of going in and you're coming right back, but slightly off.
Oh, so yeah, rally races have some nice hairpin turns and shit like that.
Yeah, they are insane. Like, I am not used to racing games that do that. Like, it was one race I did where it was like laps, and on the first lap, I just kept going straight. And on the next lap, it was like, okay, she yelled off her rubber spotter lingo. She yelled, I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And there were cones in front of the track where I went before, and I didn't know where the turn was supposed to go by virtue of expecting to see a turn. So I went to the grass. I don't know what to do.
And it sounds like CJ playing a racing game, just driving in the grass.
It was actually, I do racing games pretty well. I have, you know, I just got the achievement recently in Forza Motorsports 5 for beating Nuremberg in under 10 minutes with a van. So I don't want to hear your shit.
Yeah, we all know Nuremberg is just a big open space, and you just could donut on it as you go.
Okay.
You don't fool anybody. You could have probably done that thing in a big wheel and no one would have noticed the difference. But it's okay. We still love you, CJ.
I want to see you do debatable.
But like, so as far as, in addition to this game, on the normal races, however, what I've noticed is that you'll be racing a bunch of other cars. I'm not sure if the count ever changes, mind you, but you're racing other cars. And I learned another new turn from this game that I didn't know races even had. Something called a Joker lap, or a Joker portion of a course. So the way it works is you'll get maybe four laps of the course, and you're supposed to take, you know, of course, do all the laps. But on at least one of those, there is a different alternate section of the course you're supposed to take, and you can choose when to do it.
Yeah.
But you have to get it done. And the guy kept saying, all right, time to do your Joker. This might be a good opportunity to do your Joker. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, brother, but I'm just driving another race. I thought Joker was like another car on the course I had to catch up to or something. So I'm driving looking for this like weird like marker to be like rolling like the bunny in a Greyhound race or something. And of course, I finished the race, no Joker lap done. And I had first place, but it got knocked down to sixth because they penalize you for not taking the Joker lap. So, just randomly putting it out there, do your Jokers. So, in between individual races, your car takes a lot of damage on these tracks, or at least they do if you suck as bad as I do. So, in between races, this is another component that was new to me for racing games, is that they have the repair phase. Your car will be kind of parked, and you get 30 minutes. This is obviously is not real time, but 30 minutes to do repairs to your car. And every type, the game will recommend certain repairs to you, but then overall, you have to decide what repairs you want to put in, and each repair takes a certain amount of time, whether you want to do like a quick fix repair or a full duty repair. So you do that, you kind of time balance as best you can to make these repairs, but if you go over the 30 minutes, they will penalize you. Way which I do not know, because I'm the guy that was not trying to go that route. I just write with the damage if I got it, but I'm going to assume you probably start up in a bet in a worse place, or they do give you a time penalty for doing it, one or the other. But they penalize you for not for going over the 30 minutes allotted to repair your car. So when you finish a race, you get money, like credits in this game. Credits are doled out by A, whatever place you come in the overall circuit. And there's also missions that they give you during the races, which I also thought was pretty cool. Like, it might say, like, you know, come in first in at least one of the overall circuits, or one of the overall races within the circuit, or, I don't know, perform your Joker on your second lap, something like that. So you get credits for doing those things, and then you get money taken away from you for team fees and dues. So if you're on a team, which you are by default from the start, you have to pay the fee to be on the team. But if you decide, hey, I've made up enough money from doing these races and completing missions, I want to buy my own car, you can go to the dealership in the game and buy your own car, and then go from there to start your own team, which now means that you have a higher risk in your races, because now you got to deal with selecting other players for teams. You got to manage other different functions. But in exchange, you get more of the profit when races are done, because now everybody's paying you and you don't have to pay anybody else. So it's an interesting trade-off style in gameplay, is based on like how you earn your money and how you pretty much maintain your, you know, your ability to drive your car.
So it sounds like there's a lot of shit to do in this game.
There freaking is. I didn't even touch all of it. There's like a freaking crash mode, so to speak. We have to like drive through barriers to collect points. There is a daily challenge and like a daily mission, or maybe even like a weekly for all I know. But you log on, and while you're there, you can do these challenges to earn money as well, which I thought was fun. I actually did a couple of them last night, and just kind of drive around and do the events to collect money and just kind of rank on the ranking boards for the game as well. This game is very packed with features. And I was talking about cars, but there's other vehicles you can drive. There's circuits where you use buggies. There's circuits where you use cross carts. You drive trucks off-road. It gets pretty nutty. And the weather actually freaking matters in the game, too.
Hey, that's the beauty of current-gen consoles, where weather actually does shit in games now.
Yeah, like when it's raining outside, if you're driving, because, well, first of all, each track will also give you like a gradient rating, which is kind of funny, but it's accurate, it's appropriate. And that determines, you know, how coarse the track is, which determines how well your tires can grip onto the track. So you might be on a section of the course where it's completely smooth pavement. So when you try to take a turn while it's raining, your car will be spinning all over the place. You got to slow down and make the turn. But it might be another track section where it's raining, but it's dirt all over the place, or it's like broken gravel. So you can take the turn hard because your tires can grip better, and you take the turn hard. You can take the turn hard and fast. It's pretty fun, and I liked getting used to that style of gameplay, because, again, I'm not used to that. I'm just used to just holding gas and just going nuts Mario Kart. Yeah, this game does not have any turtle shells or banana peels. I was disappointed in that, I have to say. I was looking for those things. I was looking for a blue shell during my eternal suckdom period. Didn't happen. But, yeah, good this stuff. Game is... I could ramble on about this game as far as features and go, but I can say, as a guy who's coming in, having never played an off-road game post, like, Super Off-Road. I'm not even making that up. I really think that may have been the last off-road game I've ever played. It's Super Off-Road. Stunt Race FX doesn't count. But I can say
all 3 frames per second of Stunt Race FX?
Yeah, but at least the car smiled at me when it was doing well. It was crying when it was getting hurt. It lets you know if you were doing a bad job.
People don't know bad frame rate if they have never seen Stunt Race on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, that game was terrible for frame rate. I loved the graphic design, and I liked it. Was probably my favorite use of the Super FX chip, aside from maybe Mega Man X. But yeah, the frame rate in that game was abysmal. There's no denying that. But honestly, coming into this game blind, I am a believer that this is a solid game. One hackneyed complaint that I have, which is not a hurt on the game, it's just me being me. They license, I guess a lot of games do this, honestly, sports games and all, but they license all these music tracks to the game. They play in the menus, but you have no option, unless I just didn't find it, to turn it on in your car while you're driving. You can't turn on the radio. It's just silence. Like for days, like, look, hey, I'm a good driver. I can handle my own business. Let me put some metal on while I drive my car. Let me feel crazy while I'm driving like a loon. It's okay.
Yeah, I know a lot of games, even like the newer Forza games, not Horizon, like the standard Forza games, even they don't really have music during races anymore.
It just seems so odd, because it's not even just that, you know, you should have the option, but it's also they license this music. They pay artists for music to put in their game, and it's only used in the menus. I don't get it.
I don't know. Maybe it's a realism thing, because when you're doing a rally race, you're not, you know, going to be blasting Slipknot. You're going to be paying attention to your spotter and everything else.
Oh, maybe if you're a sucky driver. Otherwise, your spotter's going to be messing with the radio station too. Like, yo,
although, man, I would love to see Slipknot in like a racing game. people equal shit playing during a race.
That's just how you know that they're looking to get shit done. It's like, look here, brother. I ain't here to mess around. Me turn my roll my windows down. I'm gonna blast this music. Dirt flying everywhere. I don't give a shit. I'm trying to win something.
So for $60, what is your verdict on this one?
Pick it up. It's a good one.
Awesome. I already got my copy in from Amazon. I just haven't had time to fire it up. So I am very happy that you are telling me that my purchase was worthwhile.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Good. Rejoice!
Stuff. Well, Pernell, thank you as always for joining us with this. And have yourself a good night, my man.
Thank you, good sir. I wish you the same.
Peace.
Next game to talk about is called Victor Vran Overkill Edition, developed by Haimamonk Games, published by Wired Productions. It released May 30th on Xbox One, PS4. Standard edition is $19.99. Two DLC packs are $11.99 each. The Overkill Edition is everything for $39.99, and a physical version is available across all platforms for $39.99 as well. Victor Vran is the isometric action RPG where your skill is just as essential as your character, build, and gear. Experience intense combat action, dodge, jump, and unleash powerful skills to finish off your enemies. This one's been on my radar for quite a while because, you know, I'm a big fan of De Burbler. And this one seemed like a more gothic style Diablo with, instead of just demons, there's like vampires and shit like that.
Yeah, it honestly kind of like the first game I thought of instead of Diablo is like, it looks like The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing.
True. But again, that just something in the vein of Diablo all the same. Yeah. Gameplay wise, plays very similar to Diablo. You know, you're going to have your attack buttons, you're going to have your special attack buttons, you're going to have demon power abilities. It's not as customizable in skills as Diablo is. The difference is Diablo, all your skills were based around the character, where in Victor Vran, all the skills are based around what weapons you have equipped. So, you know, in Diablo, the barbarian just has a whirlwind attack. If you want to do the whirlwind attack in Victor Vran, it's only if you're using the scythe. Or, you know, they have swords, they have rapiers, they have giant hammers. Even in the DLC, they have like revolvers and electric guitars, which I will get to.
Interesting.
Which I will get to in a moment. But gameplay wise, it's just standard, awesome, satisfying isometric action RPG hack and slash dungeon crawler. Everything is separated into levels. There's a world map that you'll select what area you want to go to. I know Diablo had a it was much easier to just go from area to area to area, and everything seemed to just flow together. Where with this, everything feels very segmented, and each of the dungeons feels very separate. But it's also easier to travel around and get from place to place, because everywhere feels fairly distinct, instead of just, oh, well, it's a random cave somewhere in the desert. Like, everything has a set name and set layout. So it's not as randomized as Diablo, and having that extra structure does help. It does have two DLC packages. One is just an extension of the game the way it is, which, you know, fun, more of the same. The other is fucking insane. It is centered around Motorhead.
Interesting.
Yes, the band Motorhead.
It's time to play the game.
It has a handful of different Motorhead songs playing, clearly Ace of Spades. We Are the Road Crew. It just, there's always Motorhead playing. Everything is like over the top, heavy metal influenced. That the DLC is narrated by Lloyd Kaufman of Troma.
Oh my God, really?
It is That's insane.
That's fucking awesome.
It is absolutely insane. There is so much style in just this one piece of DLC that it puts like the entire series of Van Helsing to shame.
Wow.
It is just
big statement.
It is. And the fact that you can get a fucking electric guitar as your weapon is crazy. And it's like a spread shot gun, ranged weapon that's
sounds like putting Brutal Legend into an isometric form.
Kind of. It really is. And even when you're like just when you're holding the button to attack, like monsters will start headbanging. Like skeletons will throw up devil horns and start headbanging. Even like you can watch spiders headbanging.
That's
it's not just the humanoid monsters that will headbang. Everything can headbang, and it is crazy. It is just ridiculous. The game does feature online play. I actually put a chunk of time in online playing with Carnage, of all people. Shout out to him in the chat. You people should check out Carnage. He is a budding streamer, just starting off.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't have as many followers as we do, but I think he can make it there one day.
He's getting there. I believe in him. Kaforna Forge. That did lead to one of the issues we had with the game. I've ran into, especially online, it was me, Carnage, and then one other guy. We ended up fighting the final boss in the game, and one of the attacks was kind of like a bullet hell, just a whole bunch of projectiles flying out. And the game, like, it went to near standstill.
Wow.
Like, there would be multiple seconds in between the game. Like, I don't know if it was lag, if the game couldn't process the three different people having all of this go on at the same time. I did experience a similar issue single player, but not nearly to the extent. And then Carnage mentioning that the issue that we had actually hard crashed the game. So
that sucks.
Like, we only ran into it, at least that I know of, that badly on that boss battle, and I haven't done that boss solo, so I don't know if it's as bad single player as it was online. I don't know what the cause of it, if it was just lag from everything, or if it was just the system being overburdened with all the shit going on. But it was disappointing to run into it. Aside from that, technically the game seemed to run fine. There were just minor hiccups where, similar to that boss battle, it just seemed like there was too much going on at once, and the game just couldn't catch up to it.
Maybe it just needs to wait until Scorpio comes out, and then
who knows?
Support that.
Who knows? Holy shit, is the game fun, though. I have put an obscene amount of time into it. For $20 for the base game, it is a 100% buy this game. The DLC is obviously going to be a judgment call. I forget the name of the first one, that's basically just like an extension of the main game. That one is kind of like an up to you. If you enjoyed what's there, you know, have more fun with more to do. The Motorhead expansion is another absolute must own. Oh, Fractured Worlds, Carnage mentioning the other name. Fractured Worlds was okay, but Motorhead is insane. The all new areas, the all new weapons, the voice acting from Lloyd Kaufman.
That seems pretty damn insane.
The music.
I thought for sure you were going to say the game is worth a buy just for that DLC alone.
Very close. It really is. To go all out and just get the $40 Overkill Edition makes sense, because then you're just paying like $8 extra for the other DLC, which feels worth it. But the game and at least the Motorhead DLC are absolute must own. Especially if you're a fan of Diablo style games, action RPG game, it is just absolutely fantastic. I've been telling Chris that he needs to check this game out, because
this seems right up his alley.
If anyone would be into it, it sure as shit gonna be Chris. But yeah,
and it's nice to see that the DLC got a gamer score too, because I know when it first got showed that it didn't have anything.
Yeah. So, yeah, with the DLC, there are 1,500 achievement points that you can get. So, plenty to do.
And nice.
Lots of replayability. Lots of areas to explore. Each area has, like, unique challenges that you have to do in there. There's hidden bounties and treasure hunts that you could go. There's just so much to do in the game. And it's just fun. It is addictive. It is fun. And I want to play online more. So, Carnage, let's play again soon. So good. So fucking good. And if you're a collector, the Wired Production store has a limited run of a physical collector edition that comes in like a metal tin. There's some goodies in there and a Motorhead shirt. And like Motorhead art cards. Cool. And like it's kind of pricey. It's like 70, 80 bucks, like 75 or 80 bucks, something like that. But it looks pretty awesome. And the game's already 40 the way it is. So if you got the extra 30 bucks, fucking do it.
Wow. Seems like Motorhead really likes this game. If they're willing to do so much for it.
Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. Next game to talk about, this is more of a preview than a review, because this one doesn't release for another few months, but Sudden Strike 4, developed by Kite Games, published by Calypso Media Digital. This game is releasing August 11th for $49.99. You can pre-order on Steam for a 15% discount, knocking it down to $42.49. Sudden Strike is back. The beloved real-time strategy series returns, this time with bigger battlefields, more units, better graphics, new scenarios, and legendary commanders with individual abilities, all of which make Sudden Strike 4 more tactical and more realistic than ever. CJ, I know you had some kind of early preview checkout build. I'm not sure what all was in there, but tell me about Strike 4.
Honestly, okay, so I'll do the little bit of explaining before I say exactly what I got. But the game, I haven't played any of the Sudden Strike series before, so it's like, the best thing I can compare it to is if you were a fan of the Blitzkrieg games, this is very, very similar. And as a kid, I loved Blitzkrieg too. Like, I played many, many hours, so I was pretty excited to get into this. It plays pretty similarly. You just do what you do in every RTS, basically. Grab units with the with the mouse and then tell them to do stuff. It's a pretty simple thing, but it has some things in it that are features that can make it a little more complex and play to the way you want it. For example, you can like drag your mouse to kind of position your enemies and get them into a formation before attacking, which is kind of useful if you want to have like your tanks in the front and then your army in the back shooting from a distance. It's you can also create like groups with the, I believe, the number keys that allow you to like switch between the groups that you're using if you're attacking from multiple fronts. And just there's all sorts of cool things like that that really help out. You can, there's also like small little features in there that just make the game feel more realistic, like the fact that you can tell somebody in your tank to peek or to go out of the hatch so that you can see further distance from the tanks if you don't have any units on you that are actual soldiers, which is just pretty neat. In the game, you tanks can take critical damage, and then instead of, they stop moving. So even if you're like have almost full health, if you take a critical shot, you can go down to like still like 3/4, but be critically damaged, so you can't move. And then you have to send a repair truck out to actually fix it, which is pretty interesting. I will say that I have one complaint that I'd like, that I'm hoping would get addressed by the time the game comes out. There's a sequence in the first mission where you have to build a bridge using the repair truck in the very first mission in the German campaign. And that took like, I'd say 45 seconds to a minute. And you're just sitting there watching it build the bridge. Like, that's kind of boring and annoying. It's just like, I get that it's going for realism, but it would be nice if it could speed it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe if you didn't have to walk back to the truck after placing two parts of the bridge every time to get more supplies. But it's like, obviously they went for the real, like, the huge realism, so it's like, they wanted to go down to the T and make you wait on that. So, I mean, whatever. It's still a fun game, and I'm enjoying it so far. There are three different campaigns to play through. I can't remember what one of them is. I think it's a Soviet one. And then there's the German one and the Allied. Yeah, okay. I see it right there. It is Soviet, German, and Allied. And each have different missions, and you play through with different units, obviously, because if you were playing with the same units, that wouldn't make sense. Yeah, we have the Tiger tanks over on the Allied side, because that would make sense. But, Each side plays differently, and it's fun and interesting to see how things work out in the game. The tutorial was a little bit slow, which, again, it's a game that just seems to kind of be a little slow. But if you're into the realism, that's really great. My one complaint with the tutorial is just the fact that it'll tell you every single thing to do, and you cannot do anything until it's done telling you everything to do. So it's like, it'll tell you, like, you got to move your, select your crew by doing this, and then you got to press OK, and then you can select them, and then it'll tell you where to move, but it'll make you wait forever to be able to actually move them, because you have to be like, yeah, I get it. Now let me move, please.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I don't really have any complaints. Game looks beautiful, has good music. It's pretty interesting. I did get the full version, so I have everything in the game. It seems very complete for being 2 months out.
Yeah, I'm reading my initial email. It says the Sudden Strike 4 preview build is essentially content complete, includes all the missions of the three campaigns as well as skirmish and multiplayer. I'm guessing that they're mainly having it previewed now for beta testing and, you know, fine tuning and polishing, and I'm sure getting feedback and addressing feedback from people previewing it and beta testing it and putting it to use, instead of most betas, how it's like, hey, the game releases next week, we're gonna have a public beta. That's not,
which is really just a demo.
Yeah, it's not a fucking beta.
But this is pretty interesting. I do enjoy it, and I like Blitzkrieg style games, so I mean, it, or RTSs in general, really, as long as I don't like you know, the turn based strategy, but I do like a good real time, and yeah, this is pretty fun and entertaining. I'd say to just keep an eye out on this one, see what things are going on, see if you want to get that exclusive multiplayer map for the pre-order bonus. I mean, it's a small thing, but yeah. Hey, if the multiplayer is actually populated, which I didn't get to try any of, but that's not really that surprising considering it's not a very big group of people.
Well, I know they also right mentioned now. That even if you were to try the multiplayer stuff, you wouldn't be playing with the beta crowd. You would be playing with like the other reviewers that would have it.
Yeah, so it wasn't a huge crowd playing.
Clearly, we're not going to do a full review of it right now, but does this seem like if you're a fan of the genre, does this seem like something worth dropping the $43 for a pre-order and getting that discount?
It's hard to say because I don't really, while I am a fan of RTSs, I don't really know what a good running price for RTS games are. But, I mean, it's cheaper than Total War Warhammer was at launch, so, I mean, hey, there's that. And at the discount, it's like $20 off of what that was, so it's pretty decent. I think that the game is probably worth that. If it's hard to say because I don't really know what the running price for these are, but this one does seem like a good one and a solid one. And if you're comparing it to other RTS games, it's a good one in the market. I'll say that.
Cool. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Super Beat Zonic, developed and published by PM Studios, released June 7th on Xbox One and PS4 for $39.99. A physical PS4 edition is available, and it also includes two soundtrack discs, so I'm kind of jealous on that one. Super Beat Zonic is a brand new rhythm game equipped with a new user interface and over 65 songs for you to rock out with. Depending on your skill level, you can choose between 4-track, 6-tracks, and 6-tracks FX. Are you ready to groove to our fantastic music selection and master the monster patterns thrown at you? Get your chops up with freestyle for endless gameplay. This is a rhythm game that first started off, I believe, on the Vita, so the game was very touch-focused originally, and I think it has been adapted fantastically for console and controller. The way it works is, I'll just focus on 6 tracks, since that is kind of like the normal setting. There are 3 different sections on each side that will correspond to either on the D-pad, up, left or right, or down, or on the buttons, the face buttons, Y, B, and A, depending on whether it's up, down, or in the middle of the two. If you're playing on 4 tracks, it's basically just down and then either up or left or right, since all of those will just control the top one. Notes will come at you from the center out to the sides, and you have to time your button presses to match the location of those notes, whether they're on the bottom, the middle, or the top row. There will also be yellow arrows, which you have to hit the analog stick to go in a certain direction. There's going to be sustains where you have to hold the button or even hold a direction on the analog stick. The analog stick could also have ones that go that you hold up and then switch direction to go down and back and forth. Those will be pink. There's also other button prompts. I don't remember what function they were, but they were with the bumpers that you would hit those and they like encapsulate the whole set. There's a lot of shit to remember in the game, but but it doesn't really overwhelm you that much with it. It seems to, at the lower difficulties, ease you in with things. But as the songs get more difficult and faster, like, you need to be on point with this game. You're going to be hitting all the different directions, hitting, you know, holding and a direction and then hitting up and down on the analog stick and then hitting face buttons all while still holding the one, but then switching over to the, it is hectic, but it is fun, which is the most important thing. And honestly, with how well it's been adapted for controller, it's hard to tell that this was originally just a touchscreen game.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. The soundtrack selection is insane. It's not all just electronic stuff, which you would kind of expect in something like this. It ranges, like, there's classical stuff, there's electronic, there's R&B, there's even some fucking sludge metal in the game. Like, it is an insane soundtrack, incredibly diverse. They have the standard game mode where you just pick a song and then you play it, and then you pick another song, play it, pick a third song, play it, and then you get graded on the three of them at the end in an overall rating. It's like, thank you for playing, and then you start over. They also have, like, kind of a challenge mode that gives you different missions. Like, you have to get through three songs without having 10 misses, stuff like that, or getting a certain amount of a combo. It did run into one of my least favorite modifiers in the game, where it's like fade in. And what that means is the notes don't show up until, like, right as they're about to hit.
Interesting.
Which
that's that would be sucks difficult
for me. Like, that would come down to a lot of memorization. I think the harder difficulties in this game is going to hardcore come down to memorization and practice and repetition, which, if you're a rhythm game fan, you kind of go in expecting that anyways, of just score chasing and trying to get that perfect score and perfect run in a full combo and all that other fun stuff. God, I lost my train of thought.
Wow, pulling an Eternal.
I know. I don't know what's going on here. But yeah, the game is just really, really well done. I think a lot of people, I've seen people complaining about the $40 price tag, but when you compare that to, like, other rhythm games out there, it's not that this is something with, like, 12 songs. There are 65 songs in the game.
Yeah, that equals out to less than a dollar a song, yeah, which is less than what iTunes would be charging for that.
True, very true.
You get a game. So.
They have the multiple difficulties in there. They have the challenges that you can do. Everything, you earn experience, and you're constantly unlocking new songs and new DJ icons and power-ups. And there is just near endless amount of stuff to do in this game. For the $40, if you are a rhythm game fan, you need to own this. If you're not a fan of the genre, I don't think this is going to change your mind, but I think no matter what, it's still worth trying it. So overall, I have to give this one a very recommended try. It rhythm game fans, you should already own this.
Nice.
All right, next game to talk about is called Guardians of the Galaxy Episode 2 Under Pressure, developed and published by Telltale Games, released June 6th for $4.99, part of the season pass. The Guardians just can't seem to outrun the past or their tab, but if they figure out how to control the untold power of their mysterious new relic, they might not have to. With help from the dubious old friends and unwilling new allies, Star-Lord and company scour the galaxy for answers. But how long can they elude the genocidal maniac hunting them? And will simmering tensions finally tear the team apart? When it comes to Telltale, we always have to get our friend Cole Martin involved. So, Cole, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
And when it comes to Telltale, I always got to take my headphones off.
So, CJ's ducking out for this one, I guess.
I absolutely am. At some point, I will play this game, and so...
It'll be like 75 years from now, and it'll be his fifth favorite Telltale game.
It'll only be play the Wolf Among Us again, and I just bought it a third time on Windows 10 because it's on sale. Nice. I love that game so much. All right, yeah, see ya.
Okay, so, Cole, what are your thoughts on Episode 2 of Guardians of the Galaxy?
Okay, so, as usual with a Telltale game, there will be spoilers for Episode 1, probably. And I will try to avoid any spoilers for Episode 2, which is the one we're currently talking about. We pick up where we've left off with the Guardians. The Milano is in need of repair. That's their ship, if you're not familiar with the series. It's in need of repair. At the end of Episode 1, you've had to make the decision whether to turn over the body of Thanos to Gamora's sister Nebula, or to turn it over to the Collector. In my playthrough, I don't know why. I've kind of taken an approach that I'm just going to do whatever Rocket wants. And Rocket wanted to turn it over to the collector. I like Rocket. So I've just picked Rocket for everything. And Rocket is just my guiding raccoon.
It's your spirit animal.
I've chosen to... It works out, too, because episode 2 is very Rocket-heavy. This is going to come back to bite me in the ass eventually, as all Telltale games do. But for this point in time, Rocket seems to be the good way to go. He at the end of episode 1, he pulls for us to sell Thanos' body to the collector, as opposed to giving it over to Gamora's sister Nebula. And if you take that path like I did, then episode 2 brings you to where you've got to make decisions. But it takes you, obviously, it makes you make decisions. That's a Telltale game.
Shocking revelation
it
there.
Will, the decisions between, again, normally it will pit you kind of against Gamora and Rocket. This seems to be a continuing decision-making conundrum that you're being put in with Guardians of the Galaxy, as opposed to like having to piss off any of the other members of the Guardians team. It just seems to focus pretty heavily. Either you're going to side with Gamora or you're going to side with Rocket. So either you choose your spirit animal or alien ass. You got to pick one or the other. And no matter what you do, this kind of is where Guardians of the Galaxy deviates on the decision making from the other Telltale games. No matter what you do, the other person is automatically going to be pissed off at you in the very worst way. And even if you're trying to be as good with your choices as possible, like I have some kind of like hero complex, and I always try to be the nice guy when I play these games the first time. So I'm playing the nice guy, and you can be like, you pick what seems to be the nicest option out of the ones it'll give you. It'll give you the typical Star-Lord sarcastic ass answers for things, but then it'll give you the, you know, you can say sorry or whatever if you didn't pick them. But then you say sorry, and then the character speaks to me. It's like, well, fuck all y'all, and you're like, okay, that didn't help anything. This isn't going the way I had planned. And this is actually one of my complaints about Guardians of the Galaxy. I feel like this decision where you're always picking between, like I said, it's primarily Rocket and Gamora. Every now and then it'll make you choose Drax for some reason or another. But mainly it's Rocket or Gamora. You're going to piss off one of the two. And it feels like no matter what you do, the other one immediately becomes a whiny bitch and hates you for the rest of your life. No matter how good your intentions are, how well you think it's going to help the team, fuck you, you've just messed up everything in the whole galaxy. And, like, maybe I've missed something with Guardians of the Galaxy, but I kind of expected a little more camaraderie between the team, because especially with the first episode, there's all this where you have the option to be like, hey, you guys are my family, and then, like, everybody just shits on you no matter what you do, which may actually be more family oriented than I would like to admit. But at least in the current state, you just like, I don't know. I get annoyed with the whole, oh, well, you picked them. Fuck you. You know, I just like to see a little more camaraderie among the group.
No.
That said.
So how long is episode 2? I know Walking Dead had an issue with episodes only being like 90 minutes.
It's probably about the same.
So I'm really bad about it. Looks like this is going to be the new standard for Telltale games, it seems.
Yeah, it seemed fairly short. And nothing was overwhelmingly like, oh, you must find this or put that there. There's one scene where you're using a device that Star-Lord has that kind of replays memory, so you can see things that have happened in the past in an area even if you weren't there. It's a really awkward little thing, like plot device. But he can just, you know, push this little button and he gets this little hologram replay of what has happened. And that's about like the extent of doing anything more than a QuickTime event. Is, oh, at that point in time, you can control his little thruster boots and go up and down a level, you know, and like fly for a little bit if you push up or back down.
Yeah.
But convincing somebody to help you push the button on another statue is about as difficult as it gets gameplay wise. Everything else falls to QuickTime events. Though I will say, and they did it in the first episode, and they repeat it on a smaller scale in the second episode. There are, during these QuickTime events, there's a really smooth transition where you actually take control of other characters instead of just Star-Lord. You're not stuck with Star-Lord. Like in The Walking Dead, you're stuck with Javi. Whether you like him or not, you're Javi.
Yeah.
But with Guardians of the Galaxy, during the action sequences, it's more of a cohesive unit, and you get to move along. You don't get to control who you're choosing, you know, swapping between, unfortunately. But as far as making the action scenes more interesting goes, it adds a lot to those QuickTime events where, okay, you're playing as Star-Lord and you know, say, knock a sword out of somebody's hand, and then all of a sudden it'll switch you over to Gamora and you direct Gamora to pick that sword up, and then you'll move over to Rocket, who might, you know, do some kind of karate kick in their ass and knock them over. And so it moves between all the characters equally during the action scenes. And that's a really nice touch that other Telltale games... Now, I haven't played, like, Batman or anything, but if they had that, I missed it. But as far as, like, what I've played, this is a nice little spin, and I'm really happy to see you're not just stuck being Star-Lord.
Cool. You get to meet all the Guardians. So for the $5, do you think this one is worth the 90-minute investment? Or is this going to be one of those wait another episode or two and see how everything shapes up?
This episode is really heavily focused on Rocket, depending on the choices you make, obviously.
Yeah, clearly.
But I don't know if it's possible to make a decision to miss the whole Rocket backstory thing, but if it's not missable either way, it's really heavy on Rocket. If they continue with that over the next few episodes where maybe you get more of each Guardian's backstory, depending on whether you've made decisions for them or not, then that would change the path that the series is going on for me to be better. Right now, I could see saying hold out. Unless you're already a huge fan of Guardians of the Galaxy, you might want to wait and see where it goes.
Cool. Well, I am still looking forward to the rest of the episodes when they come along. And I'm sure we'll have you on for those as well.
Most likely.
Because that's what you do. But thank you as always for checking out the Telltale stuff for us. And I know you'll be back on with us this weekend. So I guess we'll talk to you then.
Take it easy.
Next game to talk about is called Refunct, developed and published by Dominique Greishofer. Hopefully I said that right. Released June 6th on Xbox One for $2.99, and it is also on sale. I don't know how long. Do you know how long the sale's going?
It was like 10 days, two days ago, so probably like 8 more days.
So it is on sale for half off. So a $3 game is down to $1.50. Refunct is a peaceful, short, first-person platformer about restoring a vibrant world. This is going to be a quick review because it is a quick game. This is a game that is designed to basically be done in a half hour. I think my first playthrough of the game took 20-some minutes, something like that. It is a first-person parkour game where you start off and you see a glowing pillar of light with a button, and you jump, you climb up the area, and similar to the, do you remember the game Da Blob?
No. I mean, I know what it is, but I haven't ever played it.
Well, in Da Blob, you would use different paint colors and you would paint different surfaces. Similar in that in this game, when you land on a new area, it becomes colored instead of just plain white. Yeah, I think my first time I played through, everything turned blue. My most recent one, everything turned purple. So I don't know if it's random every time. But that goes towards an overall completion percentage. The main thing that you need to accomplish is hitting those buttons, though. And once you hit that button, new platforms rise out of the water with a new button that you have to hit. And those will rise more platforms out. And it's basically just hit the buttons, get all the platforms up, and when the last section is up, you'll see a yellow button. You hit that one, and it's game over. And then nice. It gives you the time, your completion time. It tells you your percentage of platforms that have had the color activated. And then you can head back down and finish painting or activating all the platforms to get 100%. There's also collectible cubes that you could pick up. And once you feel that you've done everything, it's start over and try again and see how quick you can do it. Today I got the achievement for beating it under 8 minutes, which I got like 7 minutes, 58 and a half seconds.
Wow. That was close.
I just got it. There's another achievement for beating it under 4. That'll be fun to try.
I mean, a lot of people are seeming to manage, though.
Yeah, I think as long as you either... I'm sure people can cheat and just get like a... just watch a video and see, oh, well, it's going to show here and then it's going to show here and find an optimal path. But, you know, if you're doing it by yourself, it's going to take a couple of runs to remember what pops up where and what. There's also an achievement for beating it with only activating like 33% of the platforms, yep, something like that. And mine today with my 8 minute run was like 54. So it's overall though, $3. This is a fun game. It looks good. It's plays well. The controls are good. I know you were concerned about having a jump on an A button and moving around. Jump is on a bumper.
So, that's better.
So you don't have to worry about that.
I did buy the game because it was on sale. I was like, yeah, at $1.50, like, why not?
Even at $3, this is... just fucking buy it. It's $3.
It's not bad.
It's $3. Buy the fucking game. It's on sale for $1.50. Buy the fucking game. How's that? That's my review. Buy the fucking game.
Yeah. It's good enough that it doesn't even get like a fuck it, why not, because it's actually good enough to just be a buy it.
It's a good, fun game. Is it going to be something that you spend, you know, 10 hours? No, it's not meant to be. It's meant to be played in a quick, short burst, you know, for 10, 15 minutes, however long it takes you to beat it. I will say it did kind of tickle my motion sickness bug for a little bit, but I did not throw up. I made it through the game without it. But
not surprised that
if
it
you're
did.
Susceptible to motion sickness, maybe, I don't know. No, fuck it. Still buy it. It's $3. Buy the fucking game.
Yeah, that's true. It's not that much.
It's $3. Buy the fucking game. Oh, man. Next game to talk about is called Area, developed by Triangle Studios, published by Sidesco Publishing. It released June 2nd as a timed Steam exclusive for $29.99. It's going to hit Xbox and PS4 later on this month, June 30th, for $39.99. Area is an action RPG in which music is both your best friend and your worst enemy. As a disciple of the great Maestro Guido, you have to unravel the mysteries of Azir, find out what happened to the world, and return the 9 primordial instruments to restore balance and bring peace to the world. CJ, what did you think of Area?
Well, Area was pretty interesting. It's a game where it's actually surprisingly music-based, which is easy enough to decipher from the actual description, but not having read the description, I didn't realize it was the game was your weapons are music and you're musicians in a school of music, And you must go. There's something evil going on, and you must try to figure out what it is. It starts off simple enough with you just there's noises going on in the sewers. So go down there and get a tutorial on how to do things in the game. Speaking of which, the tutorial was probably one of the worst tutorials I've ever gone through. I mean, no offense to the game, but none of the tutorials were where they should have been. Like, it would pop up on the screen with, like, this is with what you got to do for this. And it's like, yeah, but this isn't in this room. This is later.
Interesting.
It's like, yeah, like, I got notified about the teleporter in a different room that didn't have a teleporter in it. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I ran into the room with a teleporter. And it was like, why was I alerted about that back then? It's like, that should have been now. And I should have gotten a different notification back then. There was also notifications in which I got that were after I already encountered it. Like enemies for the first time. I just assumed, okay, I guess there isn't a tutorial for enemies. And then after I defeated the enemies, I went into the next room with enemies. And it was like, and sometimes creatures are evil and they'll attack you. And it's like, I just dealt with them. I know this now. Like, why didn't it tell me that the first time? It's just... the tutorial was completely out, just out of order, which was kind of weird, but oh well. The gameplay itself is pretty simple. It's a Diablo-style game, but much more simplistic than that. You don't have, like, a billion abilities and stuff like that, but it is still a similar style of game. You fight using, sadly not... twin stick. I was hoping that, like, you could aim your weapons with the right stick to make it a little bit easier, since I was playing as the ranged mage, but you cannot. Like, I don't see a way to aim at all. You just basically point your character in a direction using the left stick and hope that you're facing exactly where you want to be facing.
No.
I think the game does do a little bit of, like, aim assist, or it'll, like, the bullet will swing into the enemy to try to hit them. That way it's not, like, completely absurd. But I wound up just using the secondary attack of that character the entire time, because it was, like, a close-range melee attack, which was just way more useful.
Online, a lot of people are saying that it's a very easy game.
Oh, it's... the enemies do nothing to you, basically. It takes many hits to be killed by an enemy. In fact, the thing that hurt me the most was just the fact that I walked over a spike trap and that took like 100 damage off of me. The rest of the stuff, like the enemies were doing maybe 20 and I had like 200 health. It just seemed like it was very easy. It feels like a game that was kind of meant for kids in a way. So it's like, that's quite possibly why it's so easy, because it's just like, it was meant for kids. I mean, it looks like a kid's game.
It is an E10 rated game, so it is more geared, you know, rated more for a younger audience than, you know, M-rated Diablo or M-rated Victor Vernon.
Yeah. Yeah, and so they made it a little easy for anybody that's actually into the genre that's been there for a little while, but for somebody that hasn't played these games before, I could see this one being a very good starter game.
It looks great. Visually, it looks beautiful.
Oh, yeah. The game is amazing visually. It has a great HUD system. Like, the HUD is very well designed and looks nice. It's very just pretty game. All the environments look great. The enemies look great. The music is incredible, which is great because it's a game focused on music. So if it wasn't great music, I would be very disappointed. And I feel like I'm saying the word great way too much. but sadly, I feel like this game has awesome visuals and music, but lacks substance to actually make the game make you want to play through the game. When nothing's challenging, it's not that fun because it's mainly just pressing the one or two buttons over and over again. There isn't that many differences. You can play it in local multiplayer, but there's no online multiplayer, and this game feels like it's a little too expensive to not have online multiplayer.
Yeah.
Like, this game is $30, and that's not like Victor Vran where it includes, like, DLCs and stuff. Like, no, it's just, it's a $30 game on its own.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe it should have contained online. I feel like that's the thing that's going to hurt this game the most, is the fact that it just costs so much.
Yeah.
If the game was, like, 15 I could see this game very easily getting like a recommended try it, because it's like, it's not that creative in terms of gameplay, but it's a fun look game. It looks great. It has great music, and it's worth checking out for that price. But for $30, it's like, I don't know. And then it's like, it's getting a $40 physical edition too.
Yeah, the console version is going to be $40.
Oh, just in general, like,
yeah.
I just assumed it was just the physical version. That was, wow, okay.
Nope. That console release will be $39.99.
I really don't know about all that. Like, it's interesting, but I don't think it's worth that much. I didn't even think it was worth $30, really. I think it's more of a...
Well, since you are reviewing the $30 version, what's your verdict on that?
I feel like the game just not worth that much. I gotta give it like a hesitant try. It's fun, but it's not fun for very long.
No. It's a bummer to hear. I know the Steam reviews are all kind of saying similar things, but even still, like, it's still on my radar. I want to check this out when it hits Xbox. It just seems like the kind of game I'd enjoy.
I think you should wait on a sale. Like, when the game goes on sale, if it goes down to like 15, 20 bucks, I think that's where it's worth. But at the price tag it is, it's too much.
All right. Well, that's a bummer to hear, but I don't know. I still might check it out. Because
check out every game. It doesn't matter what we say. I could have gave it an absolute deny it worst game I've ever played.
Oh, and this game, it's a piece of shit. Oh, no, it looks kind of good.
it looks great. It does look great.
Yeah. I don't know. I still think that it might be something that I would enjoy a bit more than you, since I'm a fan of just that genre of game.
Get me wrong. I like some of those kind of games. Like,
I do worry about the difficulty, that everyone's saying how easy it is. But hopefully, who knows, maybe later on this month we'll be able to check out the console version. I guess we'll see. But
get a second opinion. Maybe
I'm not right. I'm not writing it off yet, personally, just because it looks like something I would. I seem to enjoy games that a lot of people don't like anymore. It seems that
that's true.
People do that a lot, shit on games a lot anymore, and I'm just like, it's still fun. I still had fun with it. I don't know if I'm just like more accepting of things. I don't know. Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Zazen, Zen meditation game. Developed and published by Nangok Software, released June 6th on Xbox One for $9.99. Connect is required. Why do not you try Zen meditation in Oriental Garden? Do you sometimes feel distracted, pressed, and fidgety, and have negative feeling in your mind in your daily life, work, and relationship? That's when you practice Zen meditation. So, a little Englishy in the description. the game is, like, just, it's straight up a Chinese game. For the most...
That makes sense.
It has subtitles, which is helpful, but that's the extent of the localization they did. It's not really... We'll get this out of the way. It is not really a game. It is more of a Kinect experience. It is meant to be relaxing and teach you how to meditate, like true classic Zen meditation. It walks you through the proper way to sit, the proper way to stretch. It has a video of this woman showing you all the different stretches that you need to do with your neck and your arms and leaning side to side. And, you know, a fat ass like me, it got me sweating. And then it gives you a timed of just balance yourself perfectly. You know, your body, your mind, your soul, just balance yourself and meditate and relax. You're supposed to close your eyes and just drift away. And
then it takes pictures of you with the Kinect sensor while you're drifting away.
Sends them
to government agents.
That'd be funny. Actually, the thing that the Kinect does is it detects whether or not your body is, you know, if you're balanced and you're straight up, or you're, if you're slouching too far forward or leaning too far back, it'll beep and the female voice will tell you to, you know, lean forward or lean back, or, you know, side, whatever side you need to do. The problem is it's all in Chinese.
Oh, so you can't tell what you got to do.
So you can't tell unless you open your eyes and read the subtitle, but that's
kind of... And then it's like, close your damn eyes!
It's kind of against the point of what you're supposed to be doing. I appreciate the fact that they brought this to our shores to experience this and to relax and to just learn to properly meditate. I wish they went an extra step with the localization to at least get someone new to voice over in English.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's just for the points where it's like, lean back, just so you know, instead of something that you honestly, I'm sure the majority of people won't understand in America because we're all idiots. The game does have two additional modes. There's also, like, the more that you do it, unlocks new areas and scenery that you can meditate in, and you level up and stuff. It's mainly you're just meditating. The other two modes, one is, like, a chanting meditation, which, again, like, 100% Chinese.
Yeah, that would be hard to chant along.
And it's, like, you just follow the text and, like... It means nothing to us because it's in a language that we can't follow.
Yeah, that sounds like...
It's tough to really... Like, I just sat there and I watched it. I'm like, what the fuck is this thing doing? Like, they could have just completely cut that mode out of the American version of the game. And it wouldn't have had, like, the only thing people are going to fire up that one for is the achievement.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the third one is, I think, the most interesting addition in that they have kind of like a Kinect drawing of the, they'll have a Chinese character show up, and then you're supposed to reach out and, you know, close your fist and basically paint in the characters that are there. The downside to this one is while there's plenty of characters that you can go through and paint, and you know, you draw with the one hand and then you have to actually use a controller to switch between the characters.
Yeah, the only downfall is that you have to draw in Chinese.
Well, no, because they have the silhouette there that you just trace.
It was a joke.
There is zero detection of accuracy.
Oh, so what is it, like the Kinect can't track it well?
Well, no, the game just doesn't have any kind of detection for whether or not, like, just to test it, I just started, like, waving my arm in a circle, drawing random lines and hitting the bumper to go from one to another to another to another. Clearly not doing anything of the actual character on the screen, and it counted it as completed. So it's just...
That's weird.
It's basically like an honor system.
It's just like, we believe that you're doing it correctly.
Yeah.
That's a good way to level up and just get all the achievements.
Well, you don't level up in that. The leveling up is just from the basic meditation. This,
like, the drawing, okay. So it's and the not chanting all just, like, are just an overall level.
Yeah, the drawing and the chanting are just completely separate experiences. That the drawing one is actually kind of interesting. It's decent use of the Kinect. Overall, for $10, it's a tough one to recommend just because of the lack of English voice acting. Which
Seems like a hard game to really review anyway, because it's not a lot of a game.
Yeah, it's not meant to be a game. It's meant to be just a meditation exercise, which, you know, if you're someone who's stressed out and, like, just you need to calm down and weed isn't legal in your state, you know, it was relaxing to do.
I feel like this game probably would have been interesting if it had just released as an app. Because it seems a lot like an app and not a game.
Possible. But, you know, again, it's a tough one to rate, just because, like, if they had English voice to at least help you with, you know, during the meditation, if you're leaning the wrong way, because when you're doing the stretches, you can follow along to subtitles. But when you're meant to have your eyes closed and focusing and meditating, you can't, you know, opening your eyes to read a subtitle if you're leaning the wrong way, it just kind of takes you out of that experience.
Yeah, that makes sense.
$10, though, if you're a Kinect owner, part of me feels like I should recommend this as a buy it, just to support Kinect development. As it stands, it's just kind of middle of the road. Like, if you're stressed, give it a try, because it actually, you know, it calmed me down when I was doing it. It was a good way to just zone out and meditate and relax, and it really is it helped. It was cool. But for the general audience, it's tough to recommend.
That makes sense.
There's always that niche audience member, though, who's going to be like, yeah.
He understands complete perfect Chinese, too.
Possibly.
That would make the game a lot easier.
Probably. But, yeah, that is it for tonight. That's everything that we got. I don't know. Nothing else.
Nothing from me.
So, we will see you on the weekend. I don't know, like, based on when we are recording, whether or not it's going to address any of the E3 stuff, but I think all of our E3 impressions I'm going to save until just next Thursday's show.
Yeah, even if you record on Sunday after the E3, there's no point talking about it until...
Yeah, so next episode probably just going to be a standard review feature. Have everyone come on, do their thing. CJ, do you have any final words to end this one?
Fuck, I gotta piss.
programs will start thinking and the people will stop.